Welcome to an encore podcast presentation from Forbes Books at ForbesBooks.com.
So we're talking about prostate cancer for a couple of reasons. One is I want to hear from you about a type of treatment that I, if I understand correctly, is fairly new. It's called HIFU, or high-intensity focused ultrasound. But before we go there and give people the good news, I really do want to scare the hell out of them, frankly, with some statistics about prostate cancer, because it doesn't get talked about as much as breast cancer does, and yet I think in some ways there's a lot of similarities, just attacking a different gender.
There's a lot of similarities, honestly, between the two diseases. Breast cancer starts a little bit at a little bit younger age than prostate cancer, as far as if you look at the prevalence or incidence. It's a little younger in women. The problem for breast cancer is that the treatment can be very disfiguring. You know, it's visibly so. What happens with prostate cancer is it's relatively invisible because it's such a deep organ. When you remove it, you see a little skin incision. If you treat it in other ways, you won't see any incision at all. But the side effects are not cosmetic, which can be very devastating for a woman, but they can be, you know, leaking a lot of urine, which is very devastating for men, you know, to walk around wearing pads. But the incidence is relatively similar, a little higher for breast cancer than incidence of prostate cancer. In the United States, there's around 200 to 225,000 men who get the disease, and about 30,000 a year will die from it. Lifetime risk, you'll hear different numbers from 1 in 6 to 1 in 12, but roughly 1 in 10 if you have a family member, a what we call a first-degree relative. So that would be like your dad, your brother, your grandfather, an uncle. First degree, the genetic pool is relatively constant. Your risk of cancer goes up significantly to, you know, anywhere 3 to 6-fold. Doesn't mean you're going to get it. It just means your risk is higher, and you should start getting tested sooner at age 40. Same thing for African-American men. African-American men have the highest incidence of prostate cancer in the world, and they also have the highest mortality rate from prostate cancer in the world. Now, this is not because African-American men get more aggressive cancer. In equal opportunity, if you will, for healthcare systems like the military, the survival is exactly the same, the cure rate's the same, the aggressiveness scales, if you look at the different grades, what we use for aggressiveness, they're the same across races. So it's not because they get more aggressive disease. In general, it's because they show up at a later stage. And part of that, you know, politically, is that you could view it as access to health care. A larger portion of African-American men have poor insurance, and so they don't see the doctor as often. And also, because the incidence is higher in African-American men, you will see that, therefore, there's a more of a familial risk to it, too, so that they're at higher risk of getting the disease. In Africa right now, as healthcare has improved there has been it's relatively an explosion like it was in the United States in the mid-90s. Of the incidence of prostate cancer, now that they're doing PSA testing, it's a ton. So it is probably more common in the African gene pool, is perhaps why. And so they're finding more and more prostate cancer, and those rates will go up, probably similar to African American men. If you look at, I could run on about this. Let me give you one other little stat, and then you can sort of fire back at me. If you look at the United States. You know, over the past few years, there's been a lot of discussion about prostate cancer being a disease that no one dies of. The American Preventive Services Task Force recommended against PSA testing in elderly men 12 years ago and in all men 4 years ago. And we've all seen a change with more advanced disease and higher volumes of disease that we used to see before that. So they've changed their tune a little bit. But the task force, you know, for good intentions, really felt that prostate cancer was overdiagnosed and overtreated. And I think they had a compelling argument, certainly from the 90s and early 2000s. Urology really started shifting to treating more and more men by just watching them, doing something called active surveillance. These are not so aggressive disease. But the task force felt, you know, they're treating too many men. It's not a serious disease. The best thing to do is not diagnose it at all. And that certainly is a solution, right? But the problem was that now you're putting a lot of at-risk people for getting the disease. In urology, our whole feeling is, look, you need to find it and then not treat it if it's appropriately so. Currently in the United States, for every 7 to 8 men who get the disease, one dies of it. In Africa, let's pick Zambia or Nigeria, for every guy that dies of disease, 1.5 men have it. So for every 1.5, the statistics, well, let's put it this way, for every 3 guys they find with the disease, 2 die. Which used to be what the statistics were in the United States in the 1970s and 80s, 60s, 70s, 80s. It was when I was a resident just before PSA came out, when a man came in with prostate cancer, 50% of them were locally advanced or metastatic. It was bad.
Yes.
So we don't want to go back to those days.
Well, it's and what's interesting about
helpful?
Yes, and what's interesting about all this information you've given us, it really points to that in a case that for all men, prostate cancer is a very, very complicated topic, and then it's a very, very complicated diagnosis. As a topic,
correct.
The question is, do I want to know at all? Because you didn't mention things like the old saying that it's the disease you sort of said it. It's the disease you die with instead of. So many men have prostate cancer when they die, but it's not what killed them because they outlived the cancer. For men, and frankly, I don't think it's just men. I mean, for all of us, because even if you're a woman, you have a husband or a male partner or a boyfriend or a father or a grandfather or a brother or just friends that are men. So the question is, do you want to know nothing? Do you want to know something? If you find out that you a PSA test shows that you do have or may have prostate cancer, then the next question, which is really where I want to get in this conversation, I'm talking with Dr. Brian Miles. He's a professor of urology at Weill Cornell Medical College of Cornell University at the Houston Methodist Hospital. You're a board-certified urologist, and I hope in another conversation we talk about your work as the director of robotic surgery. But the point I want to make here, is that even if a doctor comes to you and says you have or may have prostate cancer, then as a man with your family, you have a lot of additional difficult choices to make, because how are you going to treat it? You've mentioned what they used to call watchful waiting, doing nothing but monitoring it. There's radiation, there's chemotherapy, and there's this, what I think is a fairly new thing called HIFU, or high-intensity focused ultrasound. And I'd love to hear your thoughts on those treatment options, including the new one.
Well, what we call watchful waiting now is active surveillance. Watchful waiting means you've decided it's a very elderly person and you're never going to treat it. You'll treat their symptoms. Active surveillance, we're really watching the patient, we're following the patient closely, and watching that window of opportunity to make sure it doesn't close. So you'll periodically re-biopsy those men because you're still looking for the opportunity to cure them, but to time it so that you give cure when it's necessary.
Mm.
Okay? And so that's the object of that, is waiting until it's absolutely necessary, but also not waiting too long so that now it's beyond cure. Radiation comes in many forms. There's brachytherapy, it's called, where you put little seeds throughout the prostate. I'm not a great fan of those. There's external beam radiation therapy, which is sort of been around forever, and it's getting better. It's more specific, targeted wise. Modern machines can, because the prostate moves up and down and back and forth, depending on breathing, depending on gas in the rectum, how full the bladder is, this sort of thing. So the modern machines can track the prostate. So wherever it is, that's where the beam is going. This helps minimize the amount of radiation the rectum and the bladder gets, but it doesn't eradicate it.
Hmm.
And there's surgery to remove the prostate, take it out and put it in a bottle in a jar where we know it won't grow. And that's, that's a night, one night in the hospital, usually, sometimes two. The issue there is recovering urinary control and sexual function. With radiation, men lose their sexual function over a 2 to 3 year period. With surgery, men regain their sexual function over, anywhere from 2 months to 18 month period. And urinary control, most men leak urine. Because we have two control valves, one in the prostate, one outside the prostate, similar to the control valve women have. Without the prostate, men are living on that external sphincter, we call it, or control valve. But for most men, it's usually not strong enough to do the job, so that men have to do special exercises called Kegel exercises. I like them to see my physical therapist to learn how to do it properly, because men aren't very good at it. But they will recover their urinary control. Some men have urinary control immediately, but most men leak, and they'll slowly recover their control. Average guy is going to be dry in about 2 months or so. Mm. Most men with three and a half months, but depending on age, 10 to 20% of men can take 6 months to get dry, and a handful may not get completely dry, and you have to do other things for them. HIFU, or high intensity focused ultrasonography, has actually been around for quite a few years in Europe, 25 years or so. Well over 40,000 men have been treated in Europe. I've been over there a number of times doing procedures, learning new techniques with the technology. I did a research protocol, probably 20 years ago, for this technology. It was the FDA was so punitive about things that had to be done that they gave up. And then another study was done recently, the past few years, they finally got FDA approval. So last year, the Federal Drug Administration approved this technology. It is not paid for yet by most insurance companies. Medicare will now pay for the hospitalization. It's an outpatient procedure, but they pay for the hospital component. But they will not pay the surgeon or anesthesia fee yet, because they're trying to figure out how to establish what's an appropriate payment. Private insurance companies, at least in Texas, will not pay for it at all. So it's a cash payment, and that's one of the big negatives. But that should be corrected within the next, certainly within Medicare, I would hope the next 6 months, maybe a little longer. Private insurance companies will still lag behind by a year to 2 years. Since once it leaves your pocketbook, it's there.
Yes. But I would imagine, I do want you to talk about why this is a preferential form of treatment. But before we go there, it does seem to me that one of the questions that has to be asked about this is, if it's really effective, doesn't it actually become a money saver for an insurance company?
Oh, absolutely. But insurance companies have to be it has to be proven on their terms,
mm-hmm.
you know. And I suppose at a certain level, they could appropriately say to physicians, we hear all the time from a handful of you that this or that or the other is just the best thing since sliced bread, and we've seen them come and go. And so we need a little more proof. But when the government gets in line, they eventually do.
Mm-hmm.
But it works. It works remarkably well. It works better than freezing the prostate, which has certainly been around since the 60s. And that's just due to the physics of cell death. You know, with freezing the prostate, you have to reach a certain coldness, minus 20 to minus 40 degrees centigrade. But nerve tissue and other tissue dies sooner than that, so you have a lot more impotence. And you can't always treat the prostate quite as well because you have to stop when the edge of the ice is approaching the rectum or whatever. HIFU is much more easily controlled. You get to 85 degrees centigrade, which is about 180, 175 degrees Fahrenheit, very quickly, and you can control the heat pattern, the heat drop-offs very, very quick, so that impotence is less a problem because you can control how close you get to the nerves better.
Mm.
And you're always away from the rectum when you do this, because you're not approaching the rectal wall. It's well controlled for. And I use a very weak example, but one that at least intuitively catches people's attention, and that is no one's ever seen a fried dinosaur or mastodon come out of ice, right? I mean, come out of a fire. But you freeze things and they can live.
Mm.
Right,
because
the body's functions slow down, so heating really does more effective is much more effective. Cooking is much more effective at destroying tissue and destroying cancer, and it's very well controlled. And if you look at the results from Europe, it's exceptionally good. In many hands, equivalent to surgery in the United States, where we do a pretty good removal of the prostate. Historically, I think it, at least in Europe, is a bit better than radiation. Just because with radiation, some cancer cells, the more aggressive ones, can escape the radiation and they start growing again. Cells that are undifferentiated enough, that are aggressive enough, that they can survive radiation, cannot survive getting fried. You just can't. And so it's really very effective. My sense is, as I've said to others, that it's going to replace primary radiation because it's outpatient procedure.
Mm-hmm.
It's radiation, an external beam radiation will take 8 weeks. You know, it's 44 treatments, Monday through Friday. This is one treatment, Monday only, outpatient. You have a catheter in for a few days. We take the catheter out, and you're pretty much done. So it's just as effective as radiation. And so the only issue there is the size of the prostate. It can't be more than 40 grams or certainly 50. You can do things to reduce the size. So if you have a real big prostate and you don't want surgery, then you'd still have radiation. But I think most of the men, or many of the men who have radiation, will tend to go to HIFU unless they just have a preference, just because it is very effective, but it's also much easier on the patient to have that done.
So it sounds like lower risk or equivalent risk, less collateral damage, and little or no side effects?
Yeah, the main side effects, there's always a risk, depending on how close you get to the control valve, there's always a risk of incontinence, but it It's generally 1 to 3%, radiation no more than 1%, although as men get older, because of the bladder getting radiated, they can have more urine. You know, their urinary quality of life usually gets worse after radiation as time goes by, just because of the bladder irritability and the rectal irritability from it. But not dramatically so with HIFU. No, it's probably that possibility is probably a little worse, but the chance of impotence is definitely lower, at least in experienced hands.
Hmm. So let's say I have been diagnosed with prostate cancer, or someone close to me has been, and I've been listening to this discussion of HIFU or high intensity focused ultrasound. I'm really sold on it. As you said, the FDA just approved it last year. How do I find...
And Medicare has approved it.
And Medicare has approved it. How do I find a doctor who can give me this treatment?
I think the easiest thing is just to Google it. Mm-hmm. There are two companies that make these machines, and if you Google it, you'll find out who users are. And where they are, that will increase over time. Because I don't know where they all are, mm-hmm. and we're as this goes, because it's a cash business, we're still relatively busy doing that. I still by far do take out more prostates than I treat with HIFU, but that will become more balanced as time goes by on this. Would it be okay if I jumped in and just what I kind of want to make people understand with HIFU, to intuitively sort of think of it, is why is this creating heating? It's what we're doing is taking these ultrasound waves and you're focusing them in such a tight pattern that it generates heat. And the closest example would be, remember when you were a kid and you had a magnifying glass?
It's the first thing that came to mind when you said that. I was thinking exactly. Of burning leaves with a magnifying glass.
That's exactly what it's like. You're taking the sun's rays, which are pretty hot. You can feel them, but they're not going to start a fire. And you focus those rays on a piece of paper or the old leaves, and you start a fire.
Yes.
So it's very similar to that.
Yes.
Very similar indeed.
Well,
that's how it works. But it's a very good therapy. And for men who failed radiation, we will often take the prostate out. But boy, they have a lot of complications. With HIFU, they'll have a lot fewer complications. It's going to be the way to treat radiation failures.
Well, and we should point out that your hospital is one of the places where someone could go for this treatment. We've been talking with Dr. Yep. Brian Miles. He's a professor of urology at Weill Cornell Medical College of Cornell University at the Houston Methodist Hospital. You are a board-certified urologist and director of robotic surgery, and I do want to have a follow-up conversation with you about robotic surgery, both from the perspective of, you know, someday I might be a patient, but also just to hear about, you know, what that's like for you as a doctor and as an industry. Thank you so much for joining us.
My pleasure, and thank you for giving me the opportunity to talk, and I look forward to talking to you again.
Thank you for listening to this Encore podcast presentation from Forbes Books at ForbesBooks.com.